not.
Awesome. I like things so good down here.
Thank you very much.
So many of those these days.
Yeah.
Did you have crazy COVID hair?
I did.
Yeah.
A long time.
No, I never got.
Well, I think we'll get started now. Good morning. I'm Timothy Dawson. I'm the administrative law judge designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as hearing officer for this hearing. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU-20-433. This is the hearing on the October 29th, 2020 application from Northern States Power Company for an advanced determination of prudence for an agreement to purchase energy generation from the 200 megawatt Heartland Divide Wind 2 wind energy facility. Let the record show that it is June 10th, 2021, and a little past 8:15 a.m. Central Time, and we are conducting a hearing in the Public Service Commission hearing room in the state capitol, Bismarck, North Dakota. This is the time, date, and place set by the notice of public hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission on May 5th, 2021. The issues to be determined for the advanced determination of prudence are whether NSP's proposed resource addition is prudent and whether the Commission should grant NSP an advanced determination of prudence. The first item up is appearances, and we'll begin with Mr. Simpser.
Thank you, Your Honor. Zev Simpser, Dorsey & Whitney, on behalf of applicant Northern States Power Company. With me is Shuba Harris of XL Energy Services.
Okay. Advocacy staff.
Thank you, Your Honor. Major Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General. Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of PSC advocacy staff. With me is Victor Shook and Adam Renfrant, Public Utilities Analysts, as well as Jim Heidel, our expert today, and my associate, John Langowski.
Okay. And are there advisory staff here today?
Morning, Judge. This is Josh Hu with the PSC advisory staff. I'm a legal counsel. Along with me is Patrick Fawn.
Okay. I don't think that we have any public testifiers in the room here. I don't see any, so I'll skip that portion of the intro to speed things along. It's time for opening comments by the commissioners. Commissioner Crotius.
Good morning. I could probably talk for a while, provide a little bit of filler until Julie gets back. But no, just looking forward to the hearing today. I know we're scheduled for 2 days. See if we can't be expeditious and get this wrapped up in one, but we'll see how it goes. But welcome, everyone. Good to have everyone back in the same room. And been able to say that a few times, but the world changed for a while, and feels good to be getting back to normal. So look forward to a productive hearing. And again, thank you, everyone, for being here.
Good morning, everybody. As I was getting ready this morning and looking outside and feeling the sticky weather and reading my emails, seeing that MISO was preparing for yet another time of significant constraint on its system, and concerns that we might be doing some calling on demand response, et cetera, I was reminded again how important all of these decisions and discussions are, and how the system is planned, what kind of resources are integrated, and how that works in the broader picture. And so I'm pleased to be here today, appreciate the company's application and the back and forth with advocacy, and look forward to a great discussion and a hopefully fairly efficient decision.
Commissioner Chrisman.
I have really no other comments, except thank everybody for being here, and my thoughts I'll hold off with until the questioning.
Okay. Are there any preliminary matters or motions, Mr. Simpster or Mr. Armstrong? Mr. Simpster.
Your Honor, I think we've reached agreement with counsel to stipulate all of Exhibits 1, pre-marked Exhibits 1 through 9 into the record that they've been provided to you and all the parties.
Okay. If there's no objection.
No objection.
Okay. I will so mark them and omit them. Are there any other exhibits, matters, or motions?
One item, Judge. There's a notable amount of trade secret information in this case from both parties in the testimony. If there is any need to go into these matters, I just want everyone to be aware that we would have to go into a closed hearing. We do a procedure and process for that when it comes time. And if any party does feel that we are moving into that direction, just to make us aware so that we could, I guess, procedurally take action on that.
Yeah, we'll keep an ear out for trade secret information.
Excellent. Well, if there is no other matters to be brought before we can begin. Mr. Simser, you may call your first witness or make your opening statement.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll leave the opening statement to our first witness. We call Alan Krug to the stand.
Can you say your last name for me again?
Krug, K-R-U-G.
Mr. Krug, I'm required by law to tell you the penalties for perjury in this state. Perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine of up to $10,000 or a term of imprisonment up to 5 years or both. Do you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes, I do.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Krug. How are you? Just a couple of preliminary matters. You are the same Alan Krug who submitted rebuttal testimony in this proceeding?
Yes, I am.
And you are adopting the testimony of Mr. Chris Shaw, who filed direct testimony in this proceeding, as it was your own?
Yes.
And I understand you have an opening statement?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Alan Krug, and I am the Associate Vice President of Applicant Northern States Power Company. We are here today to ask that the Commission grant our requested advanced determination of prudence for 150 megawatts of the Heartland Divide 2 PPA. Heartland Divide 2 is a 200-megawatt wind energy facility located in Audubon County, Iowa, with a targeted commercial operation date of December 31, 2021. The company entered into a power purchase agreement with the owners of Heartland Divide 2 at very attractive pricing and a term of 25 years. The company is acquiring this resource addition to provide additional renewable energy for a planned data center campus at the company's Sherco Generating Plant site in Sherburn County, Minnesota. A critical piece of supporting this potential new load is the procurement of enough incremental renewable generation to match the data center's site's expected annual energy use. At the time the company signed up the data center, it estimated that it would need to procure an initial 300 megawatts of incremental wind generation to cost-effectively meet its obligations. The Commission previously approved the Dakota Range 3 PPA to fill approximately half of this commitment. The Heartland Divide 2 project is aimed at fulfilling the remaining 150 megawatts. The PPA is necessary for supporting the data center, as explained, but only 150 megawatts is required. The remaining 50 megawatts will be assigned to the Renewable Connect program in Minnesota. This program offers Minnesota customers the option to voluntarily purchase blocks of renewable energy. As such, the energy costs will be borne directly by participants in that program. Since this program is based in Minnesota and energy from the 50 megawatts will not be allocated to North Dakota customers, the company is not seeking an ADP for this portion of the project. The PPA is a prudent resource as it will provide cost savings to all NSP customers, including North Dakota customers. Both the company and advocacy staff's witnesses analysis confirmed that the PPA will result in at least some savings for customers. The company's Encompass modeling shows that the entire 200-megawatt project results in customer benefits on a system-wide basis of $97.4 million on a present value of revenue requirements basis. The company is requesting approval of the PPA as a system energy resource because of the attractive price of energy under the PPA, will lower NSP's overall fuel costs and result in significant benefits to the company's resources, to the company's customers. Even if the data center load does not materialize or use all 300 megawatts of the renewable energy procured to serve it, the PPA will still generate savings for customers because the fixed energy pricing from this PPA will lower the company's overall fuel costs and result in lower costs for customers. The proposed Heartland 2 Divide PPA is prudent as it represents an opportunity to lower customers' fuel costs while facilitating the addition of the data center load to the NSP system. The company, therefore, respectfully requests that the Commission grant the requested ADP for the Heartland Divide 2 PPA without any conditions. I look forward to discussing this project with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. The witness is available for cross-examination.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Krug, in Mr. Shaw's testimony in the application, the company indicates it will allocate 75% of the cost and energy of this Heartland PPA to serve Honeycrisp. Is that the intent?
Yes.
But the application asks us to treat this like a system resource. You understand that, correct?
Yes.
Do you agree that this PPA is not being entered into to satisfy a system demand?
Well, the PPA will, let me back up, I apologize. Actually, the energy costs related to this particular PPA will be sunk to the system and benefit all customers, and therefore it will lower system costs for all customers. The renewable energy credits will be used to meet the needs of the Honeycrisp contract.
And how will it lower costs for all customers if it's used for the Honeycrisp?
Well, as I said, the energy itself will be sunk to the system and be allocated to all customers through the FCAs.
Is this PPA being entered into to satisfy a system demand?
The demand is created by our need to fulfill the Honeycrisp contract, but it is a least cost resource as it lowers system costs.
Is the energy from Heartland Divide even needed to satisfy the anticipated load for the data center?
The energy, as I said, will be sunk to the system. We certainly do have adequate energy to serve Honeycrisp, but the renewable energy credits are needed as pursuant to the contract with Honeycrisp.
Is the capacity needed to satisfy the anticipated load from the data center?
I think we have adequate capacity regardless of of this particular project.
With the addition of all the wind in the last few years and the projects being sought to be added to the system in the future, why is Heartland 2 PPA needed for the Google contract instead of something that's already in place or that we have planned coming up in the future?
Well, I believe this, without going into all the details of the contract, I believe this particular customer was interested in a new renewable project, meaning a greenfield project, part of their own corporate policies.
And you're asking for, in this ADP, for North Dakota customers to pay for that project, is that correct?
The project itself and the costs related to that project will lower system costs, so yes, we are. We are requesting that they pay.
And part of what North Dakota customers will be paying for are the renewable energy credits that come along with that project?
The renewable energy credits flow through with the price, and so I suppose there is they are, in effect, paying for that, yes.
And how are renewable energy credits, you okay if I just call them RECs?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are RECs treated in normal course with NSP's North Dakota customers?
Generally, renewable energy credits would be allocated to all customers pursuant to our normal policies. In this case, but for the allocation of these RECs, we would not be able to have completed the agreement with Honeycrisp. Therefore, we're requesting different treatment.
What if all the RECs aren't needed for the data center project?
Then they would ultimately be allocated to all customers.
And is that what would happen with any leftover wrecks as well?
Could you just clarify what you mean by leftover?
So how would we know which wrecks are used for the Honeycrisp project and which wrecks go back to North Dakota customers?
Well, we will do separate accounting. Essentially, we have to match the load of Honeycrisp, match our wreck usage to the load of Honeycrisp. And so we will be able to account for that on an annual basis.
And if the Honeycrisp project doesn't materialize, the wrecks will be treated in the usual manner by being allocated to the North Dakota customer, their share?
Yes, they will.
Because that's something they've paid for. That's a benefit they've paid for.
Well, as I said, the answer is yes, they would certainly get allocated those wrecks.
I'd like to move on to the Renewable Connect portion of the PPA for a few minutes. Could you just explain for us what is WindSource?
WindSource is, and the two programs are somewhat related. WindSource is the predecessor to Renewa Connect.
I'm going to ask you the same questions for Renewable Connect,
sure.
too. So if they're interconnected and it's easier to explain it accurately by talking about them together, please go ahead.
I'll do so, because they are related. RenewaSource and RenewaConnect are what you would call green pricing programs that a number of our customers expressed interest in. We offered them to our we made a special tariff offering for our customers. RenewaSource preceded RenewaConnect, WindSource. It was strictly wind. Customers paid a certain premium to get that energy. And then RenewaConnect really just simply adds some additional resources, including solar. Both programs are designed to be non-subsidized, meaning that the customers are paying the full costs of the entire system.
What resources are in WindSource or Renewable Connect?
I don't know that I have all the specific resources. There's a number of resources that are used in WindSource. One of them would be Moraine 2. There's a number of other smaller wind facilities for WindSource. RenewaConnect, we've added some solar resources as well as the proposed project here, as well as Dakota Range 3. I believe is also a possibility there too.
How is it decided what resources go into WindSource or Renewable Connect?
Well, we've done some special competitive processes to attempt to find those resources. Of course, our primary goal and the vast majority of all of our resources that we try to procure are for the system overall, but we have done some special processes to try to obtain resources for this purpose.
You're going to have to help me understand what special competitive processes are.
Well, I let me apologize. There's really nothing all that special about them other than it's a separate process for a specific purpose.
So is there some driving factor that says this will be a system resource and this will go into Renewable Connect?
Well, I think it's really more a matter of timing is really what we've done, nothing more than that.
Do I understand the company's application and testimony to be that the primary basis for the prudence of this PPA is that it will result in customer savings?
Yes.
But NSP also wants to carve out 50 megawatts of this PPA for the Renewable Connect project, correct?
Yes.
And NSP indicates that the anticipated savings from your testimony or the company's testimony is $97.4 million over the 25-year term?
Yes.
And that number includes the 50 megawatts from Renewable Connect, is that correct?
I'll have to check on that. As was my understanding that the 97.4 is only for the 150.
And we can check on that. My understanding was it was for the entire 200, but let's just presume for my purposes of my next question, it was for the entire 200 megawatts. Would that mean that the anticipated savings for the 75% would be 25% less than 97.4 million?
I think Ms. Mandich can answer that question better.
And I should have mentioned this, but if it's a question that's for another witness that'll be today, then you can certainly direct me in that way. If the data center load does not materialize, does the company still intend 25% of the Heartland PPA to go to the Renewable Connect?
Yes.
And only 25%?
Yes.
If the commission agrees this PPA is prudent due to cost savings, doesn't carving out 25% of those cost savings for Renewable Connect diminish the overall cost savings to other customers?
Well, I think we started out with a targeted approach for obtaining the RECs for the necessary RECs for the Honeycrisp PPA. We also have an expanding NEDARM Renewa Connect. So I think the combined purpose just makes sense.
Well, and I understand that, but it didn't really answer my question, and that is, if the basis is cost savings, why would you pull some out?
Well, I think the cost savings are there for the 150 megawatts. Certainly, all customers will benefit from that.
Okay. And then the Renewable Connect customers will benefit from the other 25%.
Well, I don't think there's anything unusual about. I mean, I think we've done a similar proposal in the past for the Renewable Connect project.
You mentioned that in your rebuttal testimony that three other projects had been bifurcated in the past, and that would be Moraine 2, Odell, and the North Star Solar, correct?
Yes.
Were the dividing of those partially in Renewable Connect and partially to system customers ever brought before this commission?
I don't know the answer.
In your rebuttal testimony, you indicated that the Odell project was split between Renewable Connect and the system. How is that split between the system?
Well, I think to the extent Renewa Connect customers were using that and they were, meaning that there was sufficient Renewa Connect subscription and usage, they were allocated to Renewa Connect. Anything that was remaining was sunk to the system and distributed to all customers.
We looked at the Odell file, and I believe this commission granted prudence in full for the Odell project, but nothing about Renewable Connect showed up in that docket. Is there any reason why it wouldn't have?
I don't know.
And you're not aware, as we sit here today, of the commission ever approving splitting a project between Renewable Connect and a system resource?
I don't know if they had knowledge of that in their order.
Would it be fair to say that the Renewable Connect project is a customer-driven project?
Yes, I would say so.
Would it be fair to say that the data center load is also a customer-driven project?
Well, the data center is one particular customer, but for our ability to acquire those resources, the customer would not have located there. That's a little different than Renewa Connect, where they are our customers, and this is simply one more option.
Sure. So in the grand scheme of things, why treat Renewable Connect and this project differently?
Well, I think they are somewhat different situations. As I said, the Renewa Connect customers are existing customers that simply they're willing to pay a small premium for a somewhat different designed product. The Honeycrisp or the 150 megawatts is really, but for that particular project, we would not be able to require the customer. And in addition, for those 150 megawatts, as I've discussed, the energy itself, setting the RECs aside, the energy itself will be used to lower system costs.
And you said the Renewable Connect customers have agreed to pay a small premium. Typically, that what they've signed up for is to pay a little more to say that they've obtained green energy, right?
Yeah, there is a what they would call a revenue neutrality charge is what it's called, and that essentially makes all other customers whole. Right.
In Mr. Shaw's testimony, which you've adopted, he indicates the commission has historically stated that its primary consideration in assessing prudence of resource additions is that they be needed and are least cost. Do you agree with Mr. Shaw's testimony?
Yes.
And I'm not necessarily agreeing that those are the only criteria, but you would agree the Heartland Divide 2 PPA is not needed to meet energy and capacity requirements associated with NSP's retail load obligations, is it?
Well, I think the need is created by, not to avoid your question, but the need is created by our need to acquire resources to add the Honeycrisp load. Yeah.
And that's a need to get RECs for greenfield, green energy, something
correct.
To that effect.
Correct. And that they wanted a physical greenfield project.
So it's not a need to meet system demand, it's a need to meet the requirements of the contract.
That's correct.
And it's fair to say anyway that the usual manner of NSP gathering generation is to go through a competitive acquisition process, is it not?
Yes.
And that's a process mandated by the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission?
Yes.
And that process was not followed, at least in getting to the Heartland PPA, is that correct?
Well, for the Heartland PPA, we followed a competitive process. It was a more surgical process, targeted process, but it was also a competitive process.
It was focused, right?
Yes.
And what we ended up then was this project in Zone 3 split 75-25 between two different projects.
Yes.
Okay. That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
No questions at this time, Judge.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Excuse me. At what point, as more of these PPAs are sought after by corporations, what's the point of saturation when you just can't fulfill all of these contracts that are being requested, whether it's through Honeycrisp or any entity? Have you done any forecasting in terms of how much is too much?
Commissioner, that is a very good question. I'm not sure that we know the extent of that market yet, but I do think at this point we are somewhat limited by transmission constraints at this point. As most people are aware, the transmission system is pretty constrained, and until we expand that, it's going to get more and more difficult to do that.
Okay. Now, I want to focus on how this ultimately impacts ratepayers. I think you, as you spoke, it would lower system costs, I believe, were the words you used, fuel cost savings, et cetera. Did you do any analysis on how this piece and the other renewable pieces, the new generation, which is almost exclusively solar, wind, maybe some on the gas side, but did you do any analysis, attach any cost to how this increases, as you mentioned, transmission constraints? What's the cost factor? How do you look at that? Saying, well, if we add this and we add the next one and the next one and the next one, collectively you're contributing to the need to add transmission capacity or rearrange it, et cetera.
Well, as Ms. Mandich is much more familiar with the acquisition process, but for the procurement process that we used and the bids that we got, the transmission prices and costs were built into the bids of the projects.
But are you talking about overall system needs? Because this would you agree that this will contribute, you know, incrementally to the higher cost of there's a rate case before us right now, and a significant portion is transmission related. Mm-hmm. That never gets weaved into the system savings. You look at the fuel cost savings, the generation cost, but
the transmission is left over here. Do you ever look at that, or did you look at that in terms of what's the allocation to a project like this?
Well, I think we certainly, in the bid, there is the incremental, whatever that's built into that bid is the incremental allocation from that particular project. I can't say. I probably have to leave that to Ms. Mandich to respond to more of some of those overall issues.
Okay. And the same question in terms of would it be safe to assume that if it drives these projects collectively drive early retirements, those that are being proposed, for example, on Sherco 1 and 2? Does that make its way into the cost analysis and the impact to ratepayers?
Well, I think our resource plan model incorporates all of those factors for sure.
Okay, and the same would hold true for backup generation, increased dependency on gas, and some other elements. But is it safe to say that this is really looked at in a singular fashion without what the impact may be in terms of early retirements on baseload facilities, baseload generation, future transmission needs, and what was the third one? Backup generation, or whether it's a gas peaker or whatever it might be.
Well, I think we try to take a very holistic approach. Really, the resource planning process is a very holistic approach, so we are taking account of all of those factors. Also, whatever happens to particular plants that do retire, we will maintain transmission capacity at those points, and so certainly we intend to make good use of those as well.
What's the downside risk to adding more projects like this and changing your generation mix over the course of time?
Well, I think with any resource, there's always going to be a certain amount of risk as our portfolio changes. Xcel Energy's been pretty careful on maintaining a pretty diverse portfolio risk, but of course, as you reduce one fuel type, you're exposed to somewhat additional risk of other fuel types. And for this particular project, there's certainly, while our model clearly shows that there are savings based on our best estimates, we can't completely predict the future price of energy.
Okay. I don't have any more questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchik.
Thank you, Mr. Krug. Judge, a few follow-up questions. So how many megawatts of wind and solar does the company currently have, nameplate?
I apologize. I don't have that. We could certainly get that for you.
Okay. And if some of these should go to the next witness, Farah, that would be fine, too. She's more the resource planner.
Yes, she is.
Okay. It feels like we've heard for years that more energy, that you can continually just displace higher-cost energy with this lower-cost energy, and there's always going to be a benefit. But at some point, that's not going to be true. How do you guys model that?
Well, I think the model is, as I said, it's holistic. And so as we keep adding resources, if you think about it, the stack, in a sense, keeps moving up of resources. So our avoided, we're simply trying to meet our load. So at some point, it is possible that that we can no longer displace a resource without and gain savings. That hasn't occurred yet, but and we'll continue to attempt to find resources that can lower costs.
But at some point, and I'm curious how you model this, the your system or the system won't take any more of the wind. It gets displaced, it gets curtailed because of transmission constraints, or you need more baseload resources on the system to maintain the voltage, et cetera. So how do you guys model that?
I'll give it an attempt, but Ms. Mandich is trying to tell me to defer to Ms. Mandich. I would just say the model is holistic enough to account for all of that,
mm-hmm.
But maybe Ms. Mandich can answer it better.
Okay. When you have customers, big customers coming to you with, you know, high load demands, is it the company's policy to do whatever it can to meet their demands in terms of what they want?
I think it's in everybody's interest to add customers that can help contribute to fixed costs. It benefits not just Minnesota, but all of our jurisdictions. In this particular case, if and when the Honeycrisp load appears, it will shift more costs to Minnesota via the jurisdictional allocators. So I think we certainly do try hard, but we can't do it at any cost. Certainly we can't give them a price that would be subsidized by other customers. It would have to be a price that would continue to contribute to fixed costs.
Okay. So if, say, a big data mining center or Bitcoin or somebody came to you guys and said, we want, because we need power all the time, 24/7, and we want it to be low cost, we want you to keep your Sherco coal facility open and not shut that down and run that for us. Is Xcel going to try to do that?
Well, I don't think we've had a customer request a specific that specific a resource. I think we certainly could provide 24/7 energy. The data centers themselves are all 24/7. So I haven't seen a customer. I'm not sure how to answer that one. I think we could provide 24/7 without attempting to run a specific resource.
Okay, so say they didn't name the resource, but this Honeycrisp said Greenfield Renewable. It's pretty specific. And you guys had to go out and acquire base. They weren't good. It wasn't good enough to take RECs from what you're already providing in terms of green energy. You had to go Greenfield. So they basically said, this is what you'll do if you want us. So I'm just curious, at what point the company says, we're going to operate the system the way we think it's best under our terms, and we're not going to be driven by the demands of our customers? Because it doesn't sound to me like you would go out and agree to meet the needs of a customer that was demanding coal-fired resource.
Well, I think we would, in the particular case of Honeycrisp, we were able to add a resource that actually lowered system costs. So it certainly was consistent with our overall resource planning. We're certainly not going to do something that would be inconsistent with that and raise costs for other customers.
But they had to pay the difference. They have to pay, you called it a specific...
Well, the revenue neutrality.
Yeah, they had to be prepared to pay for any additional costs. It sounds like that...
Well, Honeycrisp is actually not that's a unique contract just with them. It's not part of the Renewa Connect program, so they are paying a price that's I believe it's a proprietary price, or a trade secret information. But that is somewhat separate than from the Renewa Connect program.
Mm-hmm. Or say a customer wanted to get its power from your nuclear resources, then you could, sequester a certain part of that for them somehow. I mean, what I'm illustrating is the dangers of the path you're going down, of having a boutique resource mix for customers.
Yeah,
you've got
I see
an integrated
point.
System in three states and, hundreds of, millions of customers. So this is a dangerous path.
I do see your point, then, this sort of pulling apart of the system. I would say we were simply responding to a very small percentage of our customers who were asking for a certain type of energy. It isn't our intent in the future to start pulling apart the system. I haven't done the math, but if you added up our Renew Connect and Honeycrisp, it would probably be an incredibly small percentage of our overall system requirements.
But if others come and ask, so then you'll say, well, there's a certain limit to how much we can do this.
Do you have
a percentage set for how much you can do of these types of arrangements?
I think really the criteria has to do with can we meet our customers' unique needs, but also at the same time benefit all customers. And as long as we can continue to do that, I think we'll try very hard to do that.
As long as it's green energy they're demanding?
Well, I think we'd have to see. I mean, I think we're open to whatever customers are interested in doing, for sure. But that's been our experience so far.
In the advocacy testimony, they concluded that the company's request asked North Dakota customers to potentially share in the costs of the cover recs is akin to North Dakota expecting Minnesota customers to subsidize a North Dakota special retail rate contract. You follow that? So by North Dakota customers basically giving up the value of the recs, we're subsidizing we're subsidizing that contract because that rec is part of the value of the resource. We're giving it away.
Well, a couple of things there. Even setting the recs aside, there are savings to all of our customers as we sink the actual energy to the system. And then second, but for the ability to add that resource and those recs to serve the Honeycrisp load, we would not be able to add that customer, which the addition of that customer will also benefit all of our customers in all of our jurisdictions. Mm.
Do the RECs have a value?
Yes, there is a market for RECs.
Okay. And so North Dakota customers would be giving up that value to a customer, this customer, by agreeing to allow them to have those RECs?
Well, as I said, but for the addition of those of that customer, there would be no value at all to be had here, meaning that North Dakota customers wouldn't benefit from the increased load on the NSP system.
Mm-hmm. So the advocacy also questioned whether that was material and said, well, the demand allocation factor decreases for North Dakota. The total demand costs increase for the system, and it's not clear that there's even a net benefit. Is that something you should address, or should the next witness address that?
That would likely be Ms. Mandich.
Okay, because obviously the RECs can be estimated, a value can be estimated for those. And I guess if we're to believe that the value of the demand allocator changing is greater, we should know what that is so we can compare those values.
I think that's fair. Given the only issue right now is we don't know the timing of when that load will be added, so it would be a little difficult to do right now.
Can you say that again?
I'm sorry. So the Honeycrisp load is, we do expect that to materialize, but there is the data center is given some flexibility on when they add load and at what rate.
Sure. Well, I guess then the choice is we can say that it's too difficult to estimate, so we shouldn't assume that there will be any value, or you should provide some varying amounts, you know, based on low load, medium load, high load. Here's what we're expecting their demand to be and how that changes the allocation factor to North Dakota and yes. what the value is.
And I think we certainly follow up and provide that. Just wanted to point out, if the load never materialized, of course, all the RECs would then
sure.
flow to for all of our jurisdictions.
Okay. And the basis for the company showing that the PPA will lower the power costs in general, is that I'm curious on the modeling of that and how much you're getting from this contract and how many assumptions are being made about how much energy will be produced and available through this contract to displace higher cost energy. Maybe Farah is going to talk a little bit more about that.
So it is in my testimony. I believe it was 850,000 megawatt hours annually. So I haven't done the math on the capacity factor, but I believe the contract, we do not pay for curtailments, and yep. there's no compensation for curtailments in this contract.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get to that 850,000 megawatt hours annually? What do you assume?
Well, I think that is Ms. Mandich.
Okay. I'll ask her that.
And a lot of that discussion will be trade secret. Just FYI.
Okay. Mr. Krug, you're kind of the top company voice here today, so can you discuss any issues that you see? Downsides that the company needs to be aware of or is aware of allowing customers to drive the resource mix that you're pursuing?
Well, based on our previous conversation, I understand what your concern is there, in a sense trying to break apart the system. But I think the driving principle we need there is, if we can do that, meet our customers' needs, which we always want to do, and at the same time benefit all customers. In this particular case, I believe we've achieved that. So I think that should be our guiding principle.
And do the customers that are making these demands for the green energy, they clearly understand that they're not just using green energy to run their system?
They're very sophisticated. I would say Honeycrisp is a very sophisticated energy consumer. How they then use that for their own media purposes or whatever, I can't say.
But they're connected to the system and whatever resources are
yeah.
running the system.
Correct. I think they understand that their electrons follow mm-hmm. their own path. Yes.
And their rates cover the overall system costs?
Yes. Their rates are sufficient to contribute to fixed costs, yes.
Okay. So they're paying for some of these resources they don't want to admit they're using?
They are covering fixed costs, yes.
Okay.
I would say that's true. However, I think based on their own standards, by requiring new greenfield generation, that meets their criterion for being, energy, a green, what they would call buying green only, I would think. But I can't speak for their own policies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's it for me. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
Thanks, Your Honor. Most of my questions have been asked, but to clarify, are you VP a senior vice president on exclusively the electric side of NSP or on the electric and gas sides?
Well, first of all, thank you for calling me a senior VP. I'm only an associate VP, but nonetheless, I have to go a couple of levels higher to get to the senior level. But
well, we're recommending you.
My title is state. I'm a VP of state regulatory policy, which includes gas and electric.
Okay. So is the request from Honeycrisp, is there expected demand 300? Or is it something higher than that, but they want 300 from a greenfield renewable?
I think we're happy to engage in that conversation, but that we will have to close the hearing for that.
Oh, okay. Well, let's just hold off on that. I can get to that at another time. We don't have to keep opening and closing. But I think this was, it's 300 that is the request, correct?
Yes.
So had they requested 100 or 200, do you think the company would be seeking out a whole new greenfield source for a load of that size?
Well, I think we would attempt to find some flexible strategies, as we've done in the past, where if we could get 100 megawatts cost effectively, we would probably do that. If it needed to be aggregated in some way and then divided up, we would probably do it that way as well.
I'm trying to figure out if you're just kind of winging it and making decisions as you go, or if you have a policy on which new customers get to tell the rest of the company what your generation mix is going to be.
Well, I think we don't often get requests of that nature from a customer. This is a very significantly sized customer. Data centers tend to be very large. Are there customers that are interested in that kind of a product fall more easily into the RenewConnect program, which is something that we add when we can. We add resources when we can and when the need arises.
But does RenewConnect give you the option of choosing between greenfield, green energy as opposed to existing green energy, or is that option limited?
It doesn't give you that option. We just continue to add resources as more customers subscribe. In fact, I believe there's currently a waiting list on RenewConnect.
So is the answer then in general that there is no policy on who gets to make these kinds of demands? You're just taking them as they come?
Well, I think, as I was saying before, the guiding principle, of course, whenever we can add new load, that can benefit all of our customers, including all jurisdictions. We'll try to do that and work with a customer. But, of course, the guiding principle still needs to be that whatever resources we add does not harm other customers and, in fact, in this case, benefits all of our customers.
And so when you make those calculations, I just want to make sure I'm understanding how you come up with them correctly. You don't just weigh what the cost of this new energy would be as opposed to those same number of megawatts from something existing, and whichever's cheaper, you weigh in other factors like what runs when this doesn't, or whether there has to be more transmission built, or those kinds of things, correct?
Correct. I mean, the resource planning model is holistic and can take account of all of those factors. Yes.
Okay. And then in response to previous questions, your answer as far as whether you would go this far out of your way to change your resource mix if it was for keeping Sherco open, I think was the example. And you said you just haven't had a request like that. But doesn't the company have a policy to move toward being 100% carbon free by I forget what year, but some kind of arbitrary round number.
I think we do have a goal of 100% carbon free, not necessarily renewable, but carbon free by 2050. We've also said that we need to do that in a cost-effective and reliable way, we're still searching for the best way to get there.
So, based on your company policy, someone asking to keep Sherco open in order to bring in a big new load probably would violate the company policy of getting to be carbon free. Right?
Well, I would say that would be difficult, but I think again the guiding principle still needs to be: can we benefit all of our customers?
But okay, now so then back to how you come up with least cost. You calculate into that then the cost of backing this up when it's not windy, correct?
Yes.
And that is primarily gas.
Well, there is a capacity market in MISO. I mean, we certainly have to maintain a certain capacity requirement based on our obligations in MISO. But that capacity could either be internally generated or purchased from MISO.
But what would it be sourced from? What fuel? Is the assumption that it'll be windy someplace? Or is the assumption that somebody is going to burn something to create energy when it's needed?
Well, I'm not really an expert on MISO. I would say MISO does require, they have capacity ratings. Obviously, dispatchable energy gets a much higher rating than, say, non-dispatchable energy like wind or solar.
So these calculations were done kind of based on what is available in the MISO market as we know it last fall before you turned in this application in October, correct?
Well, MISO pricing and the capacity market and all of those things are baked into that resource plan. There are assumptions around forward curves for energy and capacity that are baked in, yes.
So this application came in, I have it dated October 30th of last year. Does that sound correct?
Yes.
So do you think that $200 a decatherm gas was baked into either MISO's calculations or the calculations of your NSP gas customers when they were thinking about whether this was a good idea?
I'm certain it wasn't, nor was I planning on $200 gas. That's for sure. That was unfortunate. I would say the long-term outlook for gas has remained fairly constant. If we look at the forward curves now, they're not much different than when we filed in October.
Of course, they don't need to be as long as we grant recovery for all the overruns when they happen, correct?
As I said, I think our reliance on gas is based on reasonable assumptions and forward markets, and I don't think it has anything to do with our confidence in recovering the energy. I think they're prudent decisions.
No other questions?
Yes. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
I forgot one.
Yes, would you?
Do you want to go next? I forgot one question was about demand response. Is this company, Honeycrisp, are they on the demand response program? Do you know?
I don't believe they are. They have, there are 24/7 loads, so I don't believe they are.
Okay. So in a pinch, when there's tight times, they aren't one that's saying, go ahead, we'll go off the system?
Correct. They won't. They will not.
So today, for example, currently the mix of resources serving the MISO load is 46% coal, 14% nuclear, 34.5% gas, under 3% renewables. So basically 94% dispatchable. There's a chunk of other. Maybe there's some battery in there. It's probably mostly fuel oil or something like that, that I don't think meets the Honeycrisp's standards of green energy. So if things get tight later today and there has to be customers kicked off the system, Honeycrisp probably would not be. But others that maybe don't have the demands for all the renewable energy will be, and Honeycrisp will continue to run without any issues on a 95 or higher percent fossil fuel generated system.
Well, our interruptible tariff it's an optional tariff, and so certainly only customers that are prepared to and willing to be interrupted will be on that tariff. So it's strictly voluntary, and then by virtue of the RECs that they will receive, they will be receiving green energy per that definition.
All the while claiming they're 100% green, even though 3% of the system serving them currently on a day like today is renewable.
Well, essentially they're greening up the RECs, greening up their energy by virtue of the RECs, yes.
Okay, thank you.
We will do another circle around here. Mr. Simpson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just one thing to ask the parties and the commissioners. I think there's been a lot of discussion about Honeycrisp this morning, and I do think there's real value in providing a little more basis for understanding of how that contract works and the sizes we're talking about. Unfortunately, that's all trade secret. So I would respectfully request that we do close the hearing to have that conversation. I think it'll be very helpful.
Mr. Shue.
Would you be requesting to do that right now or at a later time?
No, I think we should just do it now.
Okay.
Because I think that will help guide the guide more information.
Sure.
I think there's information on the record
that
is worthwhile.
All right, Judge, I would request just a maybe 5-minute recess to get the paper ready.
I need a convenience break before that. So we're going to take a 5 to 10 minute break, be back here in 7 minutes, and then we'll proceed from there.
Sounds good.
We're at recess.
Wait.
Well,
Commissioner
Crosches.
Yes.
You certainly can.
This should be pretty quick, but I don't want to gloss over or downplay the value of the RECs. So I'm going to ask you a general question. Would you say that RECs have significant value in the market today?
Hard to define significant, but I would say the market price for RECs is probably about $3 a megawatt hour. I mean, they could add up, yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's... fair to say that there is a fair amount of value to the RECs, and have you seen the price go higher than $3?
I think they the Midwest, because we're overcomplied, they've been somewhat limited, but if you look on the West Coast, they're
high. East Coast high as well?
I think so.
Yeah, approaching, in some cases, $40?
Yeah, that's right.
And if policy changes are implemented, RECs in the Midwest could also rise, appreciate in value. Well, not appreciate, that's probably not the best term, but increase in value.
Yes, they could.
Okay. And then just one thing to it's more of a general question, but in terms of the Minnesota mandate that utilities are required to meet, would it be fair to say, just because since I've been on the commission, on your website it stated carbon free by 2050.
Yes.
I think that's on the homepage,
mm-hmm.
I believe. Does Minnesota policy in terms of
the renewable energy requirements really factor into the business model at Xcel, since you're so far ahead of what they're doing?
I think that's a good question, and I think what's happened is, by virtue of the technology gains in both primarily solar and wind, it's been a non-binding mandate in a sense, meaning that we've been able to cost-effectively add these resources and would have added them regardless of the mandate.
Yeah, we get a little bit of it on the political side, as you might imagine. Well, they're doing this, you know, when we make decisions to support Minnesota policy, but in the case of Xcel, it doesn't seem like that's accurate, since you, again, are so far ahead of the curve in terms of the expectation.
I think that's true.
And then just one other comment, and I know we're going to go into closed session, and I was going to say this at the beginning, but just something for parties to keep in mind. I understand the sensitivity of some of this information, why it's trade secret protected. I really do. But you also have to understand that when we're making decisions and we're trying to explain this to the public, this is a good deal. Being in a position of, well, just trust us, doesn't always fly as effectively as you would like it to. So not for the case of this particular proceeding, but moving forward, I would ask not just this company, but all companies to be very judicious in terms of what you request to be trade secret protected. Because, again, from a transparency standpoint, it creates challenges. So just something to please keep in mind.
If there are no further questions, we will be at recess by the clock on the back of the room until 35 minutes after.
And
we are back on the record, and it is approximately 40 minutes after 9 a.m. Mr. Simser, you have asked for an executive session?
No, I've asked for the hearing to be conducted in a closed manner so that we may discuss trade secret information.
Okay, a closed manner. So we can. And what information do you recommend or suggest be discussed?
I believe it will be the terms around the Honeycrisp LLC ESA at a broad level.
Is there any other matters that may be entered into that we could foresee and notice before going forward?
Quite frankly, Your Honor, outside of sort of the normal PPA-related trade secret items, I think that's all we need to discuss in closed session.
Anything to add, Mr. Strong?
I think, as Mr. Simser has described it, we'll cover the information we have discussed outside of the hearing. So, no, nothing else to add. Just trying to make sure I'm... It's new to me, too, as well, the trade secret information for the Honeycrisp RESA, so I wouldn't know how to disclose what we want to talk about without saying what the trade secret information is, but it comes from the Honeycrisp agreement.
Okay.
Okay.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
This portion of the hearing concerns viewing protected information for...
As soon as she's done with Noah.
Sorry. I'll tell you when. I think it's in the script. This portion of the hearing concerns viewing protected information for the captioned case. This matter may be discussed in a closed meeting. The legal authority for closing this meeting is North Dakota Century Code Chapter 4404, including NDCC 4404 19.1 and 19.2. The purpose of this executive session is for viewing protected information pursuant to NDCC 4404-18 and 4404-18.4. At this time, a motion would be in order to discuss the case in closed meeting rather than in an open meeting. Is there such a motion?
There is, Madam Chair. I move the Commission convene a closed meeting in order to view protected information in Northern States Power Company Advance Prudence 200 megawatt Heartland Divide Wind 2 application, case number PU-20-433.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I will take a roll call vote. Commissioner Christman.
Aye.
Commissioner Crosius.
Aye.
Commissioner Fedorchak also votes aye. All right, the motion is approved. The closed portion of the hearing will be recorded, and all members of the commission are reminded to limit their discussion during the closed portion of the hearing to the announced topic. We will now ask the members of the public who are attending the meeting to leave the room. There are no members of the public here. The minutes will show that the closed portion of the hearing began at 9:45 a.m. and was attended by... Jack, do I need to list everybody in the room?
We could just have the parties list all the people they brought with them to make it simpler, but we do have to list everybody who is attending this meeting. This closed
into
portion.
The recording?
Into the recording.
Okay. So we'll just go around the room and say our names into the microphone then.
Sure.
Julie Fedorchak.
Randy Christman.
Brian Crosius.
Judge Dawson.
Alan Krug.
Zev Simser. Shuba Harris. Farah Mandich. Dave Cedarquist.
Mitch Armstrong. Jim Heidel. Victor Shook. Adam Renfrant. John Nagowski.
John Hsu, Patrick Fawn, and we also have Matt Kluzak and Brian Johnson, and of course, yourself, Judge Dawson.
I do have one question. We have two, I see, on the screen, participants.
It's just our logins and all.
You okay. Okay.
So everyone in the room has been identified. Now is the time to stop the recording and stop the broadcast.